Welcome to the Listening Tide. Our guest today is Tao Frowitz Sambolic. Welcome, Tao. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Help.
What we just heard is Kajsa Eslund from an album called Von Nordiska Klanger. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what we just heard as the starting track.
Like contrary to what I thought I heard when I first heard this album, it is not like, maybe I should say first what it is not. It is not a recording of experimental sound, free improvised group or soloist happening somewhere in some festival of contemporary sound art or noise music.
Mm-hmm.
But it is actually one track out of many of this CD that's called For Nordiska Klanger, it's a Swedish edition of a musicological project, if I am not mistaken, from around 70s,
mm-hmm.
Where a group of musicologists and archaeologists gathered and tried to imagine what would be the sounds that prehistoric men in Scandinavia and women in Scandinavia would be making with artifacts, the fragments of artifacts that the archaeologists found.
These are in fact the tools that they imagined.
Yeah, tools or instruments or something, you know, like they would kind of, it's always a bit speculative.
Mm.
But yeah, so they would try to kind of like contextualize and activate this this material kind of fragments
mm.
into some kind of sound expression that would be either like in service of kind of producing sound, or just like the sound of doing something, of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were listening to one of those tracks. I must say that I did not want to go very deep or not even very deep. I just did not want to read the booklet explaining exactly what each track represents, because I find it like kind of more captivating to listen to it, to these sounds, not knowing what the imagination of those archaeologists,
yeah,
about, you know, like, and their speculations are. So I rather like just know that I'm listening to their speculations.
Would it be fair to say that in that sense it's that, so this from this collaboration in the 70s, which also interestingly enough somehow to me sounds like a 70s project. this curiosity becomes shared into this, and then on the one hand the research and the science creates a booklet, explains it, gives it a foundation, mm-hmm. and on the other hand what perhaps you describe, if I'm putting words in your mouth, but as more the mystery of it. Or is it not the word I should be using? Is it the imagination that's allowed in the sound itself, and that's enough?
Yeah, I mean, like the way I kind of approach this, it's like trying to think about sound and listening, and like, you know, this kind of the nature of the sound and its source, and like what is the source of sound and what is the presence of sound? Is it the source or is it the sound itself?
Mm-hmm.
And what is, where does the vibrancy come from? Like in the case of sound, of like being in between, always leaving the source and leaving the source behind, and kind of catching your ear somewhere, and then like I think that in this case, like revealing the source of the sound somehow kills the sound.
Okay. Here we may. This might be an example of also the boundary between art and science, and maybe also. So the reason you're here in part is what kind of artist you are, as well. If I may just borrow from your bio on the website, is that you're an Amsterdam-based artist, and researcher, which I'd like to get back to in a moment, with a particular focus on sound. New media, real-time interaction, and questions of contemporary mediation in relation to the sense of presence or bodily presence.
Right.
In exactly what you say in this case.
Yeah.
That bodily presence, like a time machine in this track.
Yeah.
Is there, because you said you were listening to it, you used the word we. What kind of setting is this when you said we were listening to this?
Sorry, like I lost you here.
Before you, when you mentioned that you had heard this right. album.
Yeah.
How long ago was this?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, there is a story, there is an anecdote if this is the right time.
Yeah, sure.
Like I heard this first in, I think it was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it was presented to me on the LP. No, CD, sorry. CD was presented to me by my landlady in Bergen, Norway, where I was like renting a room from her, and she knew that I was into sound and so she said, maybe you would like that.
Okay.
And
it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was such a surprise because I was like, okay. And then I put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, wow, what is this?
Mm.
And then I like looked at, like, you know, read a little bit, as I said, not too much, but I stopped immediately because I just wanted to hear, like, because it does sound like very particular and very, like, how shall I say, like, it's very sound oriented in a sense of like kind of trying to, like, you can hear behind this project, this kind of like archaeological project, there is like a really like a big investment into the sonic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is like they were really trying to kind of capture the sonic presence or the imagined sonic presence of some time that we cannot really kind of approach. It's inaccessible.
Is the word composition then still applicable in that?
I mean the composition on the meta level, yes.
Okay.
I mean it is a composition. It's a project. Like it's, you know, it's like it's this sound is only a small part of it. Mm-hmm. Like everything else, it's like it's a project. It's in that and in this sense, it is a composition. But yeah, I mean, what the track that we just heard now, I think it's more an activity than a composition, but then again, it's not really an activity because nothing, you know, it's being like whatever activity, it's kind of being done in order to record the sound of it. Nothing is being done. It's not like the box of with the sound of its own making or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is performative in the sense, but trying not to be. So it's like, so this is why I also brought that this CD today with me, because I think it opens up a lot of questions of like the source, the sound, the listening, the projection, the temporality of what is, you know, first there is like physical action and then the sound follows immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now there is like this kind of, with this, CD, it's kind of a time wrap of like trying to kind of project something back into the past that sounds very much like experimental sound music.
And just to be sure, also to know from you, is there a situation of illustration there as well in illustrating what perhaps that kind of projection.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, is that unfair to say?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't come to mind, but you could say so. But I think it's, illustrating is when what's the difference between speculation and illustration?
Sonically speaking, perhaps that even more complex question.
Yeah, I mean, if we would speak about sonic illustration, then it's usually like, and then we can, there is a broad spectrum, like from that, like on the level of sound and folly, like, you know, like you have all these actions and then there is a folly artist that kind of illustrates them. Yeah. But then the source is known, everything is there. It's like pretty set. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like to create an illusion of that, how that action sounds, to kind of make it sound in the context of this aural reality that is either radiophonic or cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is one way of like thinking about illustration in sound. Another way is like in programmatic music, like of 19th century, like there is the Bedřich Smetana, a symphonic work called Vltava. It's like all about the river. And then, like when we were at school, they were always like teaching us, yeah, you listen to this. This is like a programmatic music, and it's based on illustration. So you hear this melody represents the small river, and then it goes like that, and tra-la-la, you know. And so everything is very much set. So in this sense, like putting the CD that we're listening to now into kind of this kind of spectrum of illustrating, it is much more, I think it's more a speculation than illustration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the source is kind of not really available. It does materialize into certain sound that is an illustration, but it's illustration of something that
it's you not don't available.
Know exactly what it is. So yeah, so in that sense, it's not an illustration.
Shall we listen to two more tracks?
Sure. Thank you.
These last two tracks, Vinare, I hope I'm saying that right, and Ben Scrappere. Mm-hmm. The first one, by the way, was called Sluxton, that we heard at the beginning. You were mentioning something very interesting about that track Vinare we just heard, this sort of whirling, quite ominous sound.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's produced by an instrument that's called a roar. And it's like it's been found like around the world. I think that it has different names, but basically it's a piece of rope with kind of a little flat piece of wood or sometimes bone on the end. Mm-hmm. And this rope is like around a meter long or so. And then the way this instrument or like, I mean, I don't know if it's really an instrument or it's like a, how else could you call it? Like, let's call it instrument. I don't find a better
word. It's an instrument of some kind, at least.
But I think it's used for also like for ritualistic. Mm-hmm. It was. I mean, yeah, that's at least. As much as I know, it was used for ritualistic purposes. So you just kind of spin the rope, and then like when you turn it around, around you, because it's quite, you imagine, 1 meter. So it's like you take a kind of 2 meters of space. Then it starts like turning, like so. This flat part starts like rotating around its mm-hmm. axis, mm-hmm. and that generates that sound.
Yeah,
it's not easy to. It's not. It doesn't just come by itself. You need to kind of like train it a little bit. Yeah, and as I said, it's been found like in different parts of the world, like from those times, like prehistoric times. Mm. And it's very simple, of course, very simple instrument and. I find it interesting because it's not based on object. It's not an objecthood. It's not something. It doesn't have a cavity or something. It's like, it's you know, like most of instruments have some kind of a cavity or empty space. Like you have the flute has a cavity in between. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The drum has a cavity that resonates and so on. Like. Every string has some cavity next to it to resonate, to make the sound bigger,
yeah,
louder. But this doesn't.
Interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah. This is like just kind of like really like pushing the air around, huh? and in such a powerful way that you actually hear it quite well. Huh? And it's very spatial also. If you're like listening to it, it's like very, like the sound is very spatial. You hear the sound moving. Circles.
So there aren't a lot of, I couldn't think of one right now, but there aren't a lot of examples of that where that cavity is absent.
Yeah, no, there is. I mean, if there is absent, then it's like there is like for example, like the mouth harp.
Yeah.
Like then your mouth becomes a cavity.
Yeah.
You have to put it in your mouth, otherwise you don't hear anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's always a resonant body somewhere. Yeah. And with this one, no.
Just to return to your, I mentioned it when I introduced at least the bio part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That notion of sort of your practice and the work that you make and how much you work with sound in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but researcher is a very important part
mm-hmm.
in that also.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are speaking about very specifics still, even as you mentioned the booklet to the tracks we've just heard. You would have rather kept, you know, to the side, because you want that speculative to have all the freedom it has in your listening and interpretation of.
Yeah.
But yet that research is obviously very important. In this case, perhaps very explicit in archaeological research.
Mm.
So how does that differ, or does it differ with how you approach research in relationship to your work?
Yeah. I mean, it does like.
I mean, bodily presence is also very important in your work in that
right,
sense.
Right,
and in this
right.
sense, we're listening to these examples that speculate on a time no longer existing,
right,
where truth in that sense, for lack of a better word, is not applicable. So it is speculative. But all of these noises are made with the assumption and the speculation on a human body present enacting them.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you put it very, very, very good. Like, and this is what I'm listening to. So I'm not like my, like, so let's say like my critical listening or analytical listening is not pointed towards the prehistoric, but towards this project.
I understand.
You know, like in that sense, yeah. So I am kind of trying to make sense of that, and how does that like presence like that is kind of slippery and so on, like that those bodies that are not present in the project, but like give way to the presence of these other bodies that are like kind of like making this whole construction there. And then also if you listen carefully to the sound, you hear it's like it's very carefully produced, like it has even some, you know, reverb and so on. It's that nothing to do with prehistoric time. And so kind of like to kind of suit it to our ways of listening, you know, like in terms of like mediation, like what are we used to hear, how are we used to hear stuff.
Okay, so in this speculation, we keep building it up. It gets richer and richer, this cake.
Yeah.
In this speculation,
yeah,
which has been reinforced or initiated together with the archaeological, the scientific, there is also this sonic element, which has tried to make that speculation sound in a way that we can understand it now.
Right.
Rather than only leave the speculation of how it may have been then. So it needs these sort of tweaks and fine tunings for us to even understand it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's even like, I wouldn't even say it's tweaks and fine tunings, but it's like kind of how to present it, because there is, you cannot tweak the recording of, like, you know, if we would have a recording from prehistoric times, then you could tweak the recording, but there is no recording. So so the recording in itself
speculative
is totally, you know, like and then if you make it, then you make it like the way you, it's being made when it's being made, and not, you know, how the recordings were being made 20 years ago,
right?
So they make it the way they thought it was, like the way to make a kind of a truthful recording in the 70s, that was the truthful recording in the 70s.
Okay.
And then, you know, if in the 60s was different, in the 80s again. So you know, and this is inescapable. This is the way the media is like works. It's like,
do you mind if I ask a rather general question? I don't know if there's an answer to this, but would you attempt or dare to attempt to maybe describe the way we listen now? Do you have any idea of how to answer that?
Well, there is not one answer. That's a difficult. Who is listening to what and how? Like we should kind of narrow it down a little bit more to be able to to say something about that.
Then maybe through your practice,
right,
both in the research of it and also the production and the practice of making artistic work, have you noticed how perhaps also the acceleration of the necessity to assign and to keep up to date, I suppose, with the way things are made now, is that accelerated? Is that changing faster? Do you find that there's a lot of languages in terms of how that is, that exists next to each other, or can we still speak of some kind of idea of like a linear progression in that somehow?
I mean, there are many, there is a dominant language, and then there are all the other languages around. And we can talk about the dominant, the dominant language. I don't know. We talk about like the most general that every that most like that is most spread, at least in the our cultural hemisphere, like pop or something like that.
These kind of things, sure.
There is like a very clear like linear progression and stuff.
And
I mean, I was like, yeah. I was maybe like when you brought this question to me, like listening to the like to pop music phenomena and so on, like when going to parties, like you can see how like this the way that listening changes, or like some kind of like tendencies of listening you can see on the parties, and several times it happened to me that I noticed that like the acceleration that you were talking about, like when listening to songs, it's not really listening to songs, but kind of trying to kind of listen to certain feelings of or memories, but that are kind of not really like not to sense them, not to go through them, but just so that they're represented. And then once they're represented, it's enough. And practically that kind of unfolds in just like listening to the refrain and then just going to the next song and listening to the refrain and then just going to the next song. There's somebody always like pushing the button on the phone to go just to the next one, because you just, there is no patience for the whole song. And I mean, I don't know. Have you noticed? Have you experienced that? I have experienced that,
sure,
that many times. It's like, you know, and then it's like you can't really like, or I can't. That's, I will say, I can't from where I come from, like mentally, and so it's. I can't inhabit that music. I can't dance like that. I can't be in it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's for me. It's too like I want the whole thing.
Yeah,
and I want to spend some time there.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of like, just like, you know, the refrain and move on.
Yeah.
The refrain and move on. And that is like, kind of like, I see it that it's more like representational than experiential. This is more like a representational listening. Like, yeah, I know this, I like it, I belong to this community that likes this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it represents me and I stand for it. I represent it. And then it's kind of like, it's like a badge, you know, like, you carry the badge and you kind of manifest your identity.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's as simple as that. Yeah, identity. Yeah.
To make a little bit of a jump, but still to understand, let's use identity to get there. I mean, at some point, and perhaps still, you very much trained as a musician, very much also... enacting being a musician, but also an artist, but also a researcher. Do you, to come back to what we were speaking about and how we listen, in each of these roles, is there a different way of listening to yourself and understanding how these positions and what come from them find their way outside of your mind, outside of, you know... using the platforms you have at your disposal?
Right. You mean like when I conceive of work, or when I want to kind of like articulate something?
Yeah, in that sense. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do. I mean, I'm, as you said, I was trained as musician. I was like trained as clarinetist, as composer, as electronic musician. I'm going to say something now that is like just the opposite of what I was saying. Like,
okay, good.
Before, like when listening to the For Nordiska Klanger CD,
yeah,
that I was not interested. I didn't want to kind of have the source of the sound shoved to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In my works, I'm very much interested about the source.
Yeah.
but this is more like I could say like I'm because I don't I'm not interested in composition in a sense. I'm more interested like talking like you said, like you mentioned that I'm interested in presence, in bodily presence. So how, like, rather than kind of like projecting some type of choreography or you know, or organization of time to the bodies. Oops.
It's all good.
Yeah, to the bodies that produce sound, to arrive to a certain form that I kind of thought of, and then have everybody, you know, do the choreography. And by choreography, I mean also playing an instrument is also choreography.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So do that in order to kind of come to some kind of approximate manifestation of what I had in mind. I'm more interested in like kind of shifting this relation between the source and then like listening and what form might be. So I'm interested into the formless that happens without like without intention of like kind of like being pronounced or articulated like say musical or artistic form. But then I'm interested into shifting attention of the one who listens to listen to it as such. And then like kind of pay attention to for example, like sonic or time or so on. And actually uncover like in this non-intentionality that is happening, the form that is there.
Is that a form that's definite or possible? Because all of these possibilities, these manifestations from which this listening can come, as you say, it's the listening that can, it's not the form that determines the listening. It's the listening, if I understand correctly, that determines the form.
It doesn't determine it. It's just gives it like to whatever we listen to, it gives it the status of the form.
Mm.
Like it grants it the attention. So like it's about attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's about the heightened attention. So like so the way I kind of work with sound or everything, I call it like also like I say usually that I'm interested in the infraordinary, in something that is always already there, but it is so much there and so much all the time that we don't pay attention to it anymore. But I want to kind of put attention to it and actually listen to it and then hear what is there. And in this sense, maybe that's why I was also like so overtaken by this CD, because I think it's trying to kind of like manufacture something like that.
Yeah,
but it's not, because it's totally like it's totally produced. But anyway, so but I'm like in this sense, it's like the bodily presence and, you know, how we listen to it. And what is there if we take the utility the away from it, you know, like what is the not utility, sorry, the purpose, mm-hmm. the, you know, like and then just kind of abstract it in a certain way by not doing anything to it, just by shifting attention.
Yeah.
Of course, you need to like shifting attention is labor. It's like it's not, you know, it's not enough to say, hey, shift attention. You have to create a situation where this will happen.
Yeah,
so this is where my work comes in as an artist or musician or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
To create this situation of that I call that sometimes like the obstructed listening. I'm interested in obstructed listening, in listening that doesn't come, that is like, or like I'm interested in listening to the bodily presence, to the human bodily presence from non-human position, for example. And, you know, how does that then manifest? Is, you know, like what does that offer? to us.
You also brought some tracks, and we did choose a track. We were thinking to play it at the end, but maybe this is actually a good moment to do it, since we're really speaking about this this bodily presence and this notion of, I suppose, where and how that's positioned. This track is called Caressing the Studio, Bed, Table, Window, Chair.
Right, yeah.
So, and you want to say something about it? Do it afterwards, or
I can say. I mean, this like it is maybe not like entirely focused on the bodily presence, but it is kind of a piece that kind of manifests relation between body and interior, and I can talk about it later, but it's like body in relation to interior, to architecture and so on.
Okay.
Through touch.
We're going to listen to an excerpt of it.
Yeah, excerpt.
Thank you.
caressing the studio. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of a lot of things, but the studio wasn't the first thing that came to mind. I mean, I definitely heard a presence. Mm. I imagined mm-hmm. a human presence in this, but mm-hmm. I also imagined a quite harsh environment somehow, mm-hmm. And quite natural mm-hmm. in many ways. Mm. If I may begin with my speculative interpretation.
Sure, sure.
Can you say something more about it?
Sure, sure. Using a recording device, so using a microphone to caress the surfaces in the studio where I was at the moment. That was in Korea on a residency, and I was like, had to do something there, and I had a feeling that I cannot comment on anything out there, because I didn't feel I had enough. I have been there for long enough, or have enough knowledge or understanding. So I was focused on the studio. Yeah. The studio was also big.
Oh, it was big. Okay.
Yeah. Which was nice, but yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I was like thinking what to do, and as I mentioned, I thought that like I cannot connect or try to, you know, comment or something to the Korean context. So the only thing I could do was like focus on on what I was gonna do there in the studio. And for me, that was like an honest reaction also. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I decided to kind of make another iteration of like this kind of line of work that's called Outlines. So the piece that we just heard is called Caressing the Studio. And what I did is like I would caress different surfaces of my studio with the stereo recording device, again like misusing the microphone, so like not to record sound but actually to produce sound mm-hmm. and record it at the same time from a very close slouch, so kind of recording the touch in a sense. And then I did that like with different objects. So here it's like it's called Caressing the Studio Bed, Table, Window and the chair. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of caress those surfaces, and then in Changdong I made an installation version where there was like actually more objects, and each of them would be each sound of this caressing was being played from another speaker.
Okay.
So it was kind of a multi-channel situation. But here what we heard was like a kind of a stereo version that is on the CD called Outlines, published by Errant Bodies Records some time ago, I think 2017.
Yeah. Caressing the Studio very much after Bruce Nauman.
Yeah, I mean it's a reference like to, I don't note it, but it is like a kind of it refers to mapping the studio installation by Bruce Nauman, where he put the surveillance cameras in his studio overnight and then recorded what was going on there. And then shown like this multi-channel video installation.
Can I ask a question about mm-hmm. it? Is there an element of, I mean, in that sense, there is an element of documentation. You somehow documented through this action, the sonic action, producing sound while recording it simultaneously. But there is also, or maybe I'm speculating too much on this, an idea of measurement.
Right.
Somehow.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I think of it like, measurement, yes, but what's the unit?
That's like, what I'm wondering. Yeah. That's where my question was leading.
Yeah. What's the unit? It's more a relation than measurement. I would say like I must really invest it here in the idea of touch. So like how can touch manifest through sound? Mm-hmm. And like this kind of also nearness, like the touch is nearness, like something that is too close to see. You can't see, it's too close. But you can touch it and you can feel it, like you can feel this, like with when we touch with our body. It's a surface, it's always surface to surface. Also our hand is a surface, it's not points, it's surface, a body. It's like when you start thinking about it, when you hold something with your hands, you actually, you know, have that many square centimeters touching something. And each of that has, you sense all of that. You don't sense just one thing, you sense many. It's a area. It's an area. It's like the body is like, you know, it's like three-dimensional. It's not pointed. It's kind of like it's immersive in a sense. Like it's like when you touch something, you immerse your skin in the encounter with the surface that you touch.
Mm-hmm. And the microphone is the same or different in that? Or
I mean, like with this project, the microphone, the way I use it, it is also immersive, because it's like the membrane is almost touching the surface.
Yeah.
So this membrane, I mean, I have a whole theory about this.
Yeah.
So this membrane, it's like kind of making the sound, but also like it cannot, like if you take it as a physical act. So like in order to make sound, you have to have a physical act. Yeah. Like, you know, I hit something and then the sound kind of reverberates. Now, if I hit something with a microphone, like the sound of that hit is kind of like absorbed into this membrane of the microphone, but it does not reverberate immediately because it needs another membrane to fulfill itself.
Yeah.
And this other membrane is the membrane of the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
So basically, like all this, the series of works which are about this touching, like I see them, I understand them in a sense of like when we were listening now to this piece, it's not listening to the recording of this piece, but actually listening to one version of it being fulfilled. So basically, there is like this moment of touch, and then the frozen and postponed sound in the media that releases in its many versions when people listen to it. So imagine like it's like the physical action that then kind of dissipates through all this speakers in different times and places that are like beyond the physical immediacy, and that's when the sound it fulfills itself.
Yeah,
that's when it's complete. Yeah, so it's not a documentation; it's just a fulfillment of the gesture.
Does that? Yeah, and in this theory. Does the organic surface have a different quality than the inanimate?
Yeah, I mean, there is, of course.
Also because the microphone itself as an instrument in both recording and creating sound and sort of sending off that gesture has a very static composition. It is a machine.
Yeah, it's a machine. It's not skin. No.
So I'm wondering how these relate within this.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there is a medium. So there is the surfaces, the exterior, let's call it, and then there is the body, and then in between is this machine, that kind of is like mediating, but through this abuse of and like kind of abuse or like treating the microphone as a sound making device also. It kind of unsettles its functionality into this kind of sound that is kind of being captured and then released at later times. And of course, it does to a great extent also define the quality of the sonic. Because if I took another recording device that not the one that I use, would sound totally different.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's how it is.
I want to thank you for being here, Tao.
Thanks for having me. It was a nice conversation.
It was indeed a nice conversation. Until the next time.
Yeah.